You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Last week I told you I'm going to show you behind the screen, sort of a Wizard of Oz moment here where you get to see behind the curtain. At least for you over there, you can see my private viewing screen. But don't pay attention to the clock, because the clock is freaking me out right now. But that's not going to change anything that we're going to do. I have a few minutes to give you an overview of the Bible, and that's what this series is all about. Word, the sequel, the reason we're calling it Word is because it's the Bible. And we're going to give you a full overview of at least part of the Bible. We did a series a couple years ago just called Word, and it was Genesis to Revelation, Old, New Testament, the entire thing overview. For this series, we're doing the sequel. It's just going to be the New Testament. So it's still going to be overview. There's a lot of things we're not going to talk about. But the idea is that you can walk away from here kind of having an understanding of how things fit together and why things happened the way they did, et cetera, et cetera. As I mentioned last week, first of all, actually, why don't we kick the house lights on? There's handouts. If you need a handout or you do not have a pen, if you can find a pen or borrow one from a friend, that would be great. But if you need a handout or a pen, these guys are available, so just put your hand up and they'll get one to you. But what I wanted to tell you about this series, I mentioned last week that the point is not necessarily, well, maybe it is to walk away knowing more. But if you think because you walk away knowing more that you're more like Jesus, you're not. And we're going to talk about a group of people that thought that that was the way it was. They were called Pharisees. And they thought that their knowledge made them more spiritual. I want you to get that it's important to understand how this fits together. It's important to get knowledge. But if you walk out of here with just that and saying, I'm done, then you've missed the point. It's about a relationship, as Kirk prayed about, as we just sung about a relationship with Jesus and giving ourselves to him as his followers. So please don't walk away going, oh, that church teaches you a lot of stuff to know. That's great, but that's not the end result here. So, last week, and we got to go quick here. You guys with me? Oh, that is not good. I need audible response. Are you guys with me? Okay, there was not one kid's voice in there. I'm telling you that you're allowed to yell in church, and you're not. I'm telling you, kids, listen to me, look at me. This is your chance. So, here's your chance again. Are you with me? Okay, good. We're going to fly, because that clock says 10:51 a.m., and I've got till 11:30 a.m. I was hoping to have, 30 more minutes than I have right now. So, we're going to review, because I want you to get some of this stuff, and we're going to go over some things that we talked about last week. So, let's look at the screen here, and the next thing we're going to talk about is the water. This is what we talked about last week. There were some bodies of water, and I think there's arrows that are just coming up here, so why don't we bring the arrows up? First of all, by the way, if you were not here last week, that map is on this floor. You guys are I don't want to say who you are because we're going to get there in a second. But you're a group of people, you're a group of people, you're a group of people. So let's talk about bodies of water. This body of water at the top here in this area is called the Sea of... All right, so there's a couple of seas. There's a number of seas. The next one here is down here. So the bottom of the Sea of Galilee, you have another sea called the Dead Sea. So you got the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, and then way over here, which all of you guys are part of, this is the... Med Sea, short for Mediterranean. So Sea of Galilee, Dead Sea, Med Sea, Mediterranean Sea. Then there's a river here that's important, and we're going to talk about that today. That's connecting the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea, and that is called the Jordan River. River Jordan. Not to be confused with the New Kids on the Block, you know, Danny, Donnie, Joe, Jordan, John. Anyway, okay. All right, so that's the river. So those are the bodies of water. You guys are the Med Group. Down there, Dead Sea, Sea of Galilee, Jordan River. Now, let's look at the places, the major nations, the major provinces and land masses, countries that were around at the time. So let's start. And by the way, it's I-G-A-G-I, right? I-G-A-G-I. Remember that, I-G-A-G-I. So down here, this is the very important part in terms of the Bible, in terms of the Gospels and all that. This is the land of Israel. Israel over here. So if you weren't here last week, this is all available at mc3church.org, and you can download the handout and listen to the point at the same time. So this is Israel. Then you go up here. This is a G. And what's this? This is the land of Galatia. This is Galatia, this land area over here, Galatia. And we're going to come more about this next week, so we'll just fly through here. Then you've got A, I-G-A. This area here is called Asia. This is Asia. Now, we know that in modern day, Asia is like all of that. But for today, Asia, especially in the New Testament times, Asia is right here. So I-G-A, G is this body, this landmass right here. It's dripping. It's running down because it's Greece. This is Greece. So you guys are in Greece. And then the I-G-A-G-I. Here's the I, and it's the boot. Italy. Italy. Very good. So Italy, Greece, Asia, Galatia, Israel. Did I miss Asia? No, I got them all. Okay, so these are your major nations at the time. So you guys are essentially Europe. You guys are the Mediterranean, and you guys are Israel. So now let's zoom in a little bit. We're going to zoom in on this section here, this area in the map. And so that's the top there is the Sea of Galilee, Jordan River down to the Dead Sea. You see that? You following me? Yes, good. Okay, so there's four provinces in this area. And this is during in the land of Israel. The first of all, at the north, we've got a province here that is by the Sea of Galilee, and therefore it is called Galilee. Very good. So Galilee is here at the north. Now we're going to skip over the middle, all the way down to the south. In the south, we've got a land called, anybody? Judea. So Sea of Galilee, and then south is Judea. Then over on the other side of the Jordan River, we have a land called Perea. So Sea of Galilee. Whew, I'm tired already. Sea of Galilee, Judea, Perea. And across from Perea, there is an area called Samaria. Samaria. And this is important. Now, we talked about last week, and we'll get into this in a little bit, but we'll get into this later. Okay, so these are your major provinces within the nation of Israel. Galilee, Judea, Perea, Samaria. Galilee, Judea, Perea, Samaria. Galilee, Judea, Perea, Samaria. Okay, so those are your places. So we've got the major countries, and we've got the provinces within Israel. And now let's look at the flow of the New Testament. Again, all this is review from last week, so if you're not following along, that's okay. We'll get there. So, there were two major divisions of the New Testament. The first major division is these books right here. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. And we call them the books of history. History, because they teach the historical account of kind of what happened. The second major division is the rest of the New Testament, which the New Testament is 27 books. N-E-W, 3, Testament, 9, 3 times 9 equals 27. All right, so history, then the second section is called they were called letters. They were the letters. So the rest of that, Romans through Revelation, were letters written by different people. Now, some of those letters were written, they're broken into three subdivisions. First of all, they were letters written by one guy primarily. His name was Paul. And that first section were letters that Paul wrote to churches. Letters, Paul to churches. So he wrote to the church in Rome, that was called Romans. And again, we'll get into that more next week. We talked about it last week because we're going to fly today. The second set were letters that Paul wrote also, but these were written to churches. They were written to people, like say Titus, like say Timothy. And they were Paul to people. So that's the subdivision there of the letters. You have Paul's letters to churches, Paul's letters to people, and then you have the third group, which is written by a whole bunch of different people. And so we just call them the general letters. If you were here last week, are you with me? Okay. If you weren't here last week, I understand if you're like, what just happened? I'm okay with that. Again, you can listen to it online, and we'll try to keep you up. And by the end of the month, you'll at least get this overview stuff. But what we're going to look at today, now we're going to zoom in a little bit more. First, we started at the very beginning with Old Testament, New Testament. Then we zoomed into New Testament. Now we're going to zoom in a little bit more into the major category of history. And we're going to look at these first four books, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Now, if you were here a couple years ago for our Word, the first time, the Word series, we had symbols for each section that we went over. And this section, what we're going to call the Gospels, was just symbolized by a simple cross. So if you remember back to that, or if you're trying to remember, well, how do I, the cross, okay? T, cross, you know what cross looks like. Okay, good. Before we get into that, that took 8 minutes. Before we get into that, I want to give you a little bit of a prologue. So you've got your handouts now. Now you can follow along on your handout. We'll slow down a bit. Just a little bit. We'll slow down. So I want to talk about this idea of the prologue. And between the Old Testament and the New Testament, there is a span. And yes, for the history of the Old Testament to the beginning of the history, which is Matthew-ish, you'll see in a second, of the New Testament, there's a span of 400 years where nothing is recorded in the Bible about what went on. They're often called the 400 silent years, because there was nothing written. Not that God wasn't working, not that people were suddenly deaf. It was just during those 400 years, there was a span of history where nothing, you know, as you finish up the Old Testament, there was kind of a gap, and then the New Testament picks up with Matthew. And so I want to tell you a little bit about what happened during that time. And again, this is probably a lot of review because I've talked about this a lot, especially around Christmas time. So there were some things that were going on in the culture during that time, that 400 silent years. There were some things that happened. As we left the end of the Old Testament, the nation of Medo-Persia, the Medo-Persian Empire, was pretty much in charge of all of the land. And that's the way things kind of went. And then some dude, right about from here, some dude near Scott's right leg. Is that your right? That's your left. Anyway, he rose up out of this nation, which was called Greece. This is Greece here. A guy, and he wasn't just average. Okay, this dude, he wasn't just good. He was great. Alexander the Great came to power, rose to power out of Greece, and the Grecian Empire then began to make their way around and take over, for the most part, the known world. So the Greeks were in charge. And the Greeks, one of the things that they did in order to make people more like them was a process called Hellenization. Now, it has nothing to do with Helen of Troy. I can give you a quick background if you want. But that is basically the Helena was what the Greeks called their land. And so they called themselves Hellenists. And so Alexander, what he did was this concept, and it's called Hellenization in your history books. He wanted to get everybody to be like him. He wanted, in order to conquer, he taught everyone a common language. A common, also the common language which was from the land of Greece, the language would be called, any guesses? Greek! It's all Greek to me. Anyway, so he taught everyone, basically everywhere he conquered, they taught them the language of the Grecians, which was Greek. And so everyone learned what was called Koine, or common Greek. And that was one of the ways that they continued their kingdom, because they figured, if we can make everyone speak our language, then our empire will stay strong. So the Greeks, during this time, they gave language. So you've got that on your hand out there. The Greeks gave language. This is important, because before, everybody was kind of speaking their own dialect, and they still did. But when Alexander the Great came through, he made it so that everyone was speaking the same language, so they could all understand the same language. So that's what happened. Now, there was a little brief interlude. This is not on your handout or on the screen, where the Jews actually were able to get a little bit of independence. And the Egyptians, there was a kind of a fight between the Egyptians and the Jews and some other stuff. But really, it was a minor in the scheme of things. But the Greeks, for the most part, were in control. And then, after that, someone rose up from the city over here by Jason. And this city was a popular city in the nation of Italy, and it was called the nation of Rome. Right. The Romans rose up, and they took over all of Alexander's territory, and they pretty much ruled the entire known world. They ran everything that was going on there. And one of the ways that they wanted to make their kingdom grow and keep it thriving, because every dictator, every emperor wants to be in charge all the time for good. And so one of the things that they did was that they developed a very intricate system of roads, so that all of the cities that they conquered, all the lands that they conquered, had roads connecting them. Roads, which to us are like, well, of course there's roads. That was a big deal. That was a new thing to them, to have roads connecting everything. Paved roads, not paved with, you know, modern stuff, but paved roads that connected the entire empire. So the Romans raised roads. The Greeks gave language. The Romans raised roads. This is important because we're setting up the scene for the Gospels. And so now you've got the Romans are in charge. And the Romans are in charge when we jump in to the beginning of the Gospels, when we jump into the beginning of Jesus' life. And during this time, you had the Jewish people. The Jewish people were the people that lived from the land of Israel. And they were scattered around for some reasons. And some of the Jewish people during this time and a little bit before this married with other cultures. And they became called the Samaritans. They were hated because they intermingled with other people. But for the most part, the Jewish people are here waiting because their Old Testament that they have been studying and learning, the people that they've been listening to, Abraham, Moses, Isaac, I mean, you just pick all of the Old Testament stories, Daniel, they were all talking about this one that was to come. The Hebrew word was Mashiach, Messiah. The Greek word was Christos, Christ, the anointed one. They were waiting for someone to come to deliver them. It had been promised from the beginning. I mean, pretty much. It had been promised from the beginning that there was going to be a deliverer. And so they're kind of like, whoa, God, where have you been? What's going on? So the Jews are sitting around waiting. The Jews are just waiting because they think that this one is coming because God promised someone to rescue them, to deliver them. And of course, this is also doubly important because right now these Jewish people are under Roman oppression. No one liked Rome, at least not in the Jewish area. The Israelite people did not like Rome. They were oppressing them. They were taxing them. They were violent with them because the Jews were lesser people to the Romans for the most part. And so they were just sitting and waiting. Where is the one that God promised that's going to deliver us? Now, during this time, you had two groups of people that kind of rose up within Judaism, within the Jewish religion, the Jewish culture. One was a group called the Sadducees. They were rich liberals, okay? And when I say they were rich liberals, they could care less about following the law. They could care less about really following God. Ironically, they were the ones that ran the temple. They were the ones, for the most part, the Sadducees ran the temple, which was the center of Jewish worship. And so these Sadducees were in charge, but they could care less about God. What they were more interested in was lining their pockets. And again, this is a generalization, but they were interested in lining their pockets. So they were the ones that ran the temple worship. They were the ones that got along better with the Romans, because by getting along with the Romans, then they could get richer, they could be, you know, treated well and things like that. So the Sadducees rose up during this time. On the other end of the spectrum, you had another group of people called the Pharisees. And they were kind of rising up during this time, too. They were kind of tired of this fake Jewish religion. And so they said, let's go really deep. And it started out actually as a good thing. The Pharisees wanted to follow the law. But their legalism grew and grew and grew until they really, on the other side, didn't care about God either. They were more interested in doing everything by the law and showing everyone how spiritual they were because they did it. To the point where there were some things where, like, Pharisees would walk around with bruises to show, yes, there was a woman walking the other way, and I did not lust into her, so I ran into a pole. Aren't I a spiritual person? But they, in their hearts, didn't have a love for God either, a love for Yahweh. So you had these two ends of the spectrum. Neither of them really could care less about the true and living God, for the most part. Again, generalization. And the Pharisees were poor. They were very conservative. Their rules were more important than anything. So during this time, when the Jews are waiting, Rome is in charge, this is what's happening. These guys are kind of rising up into prominence, and we're going to see them all through the Gospels. So that's kind of what happened. That's a quick background of what happened during that time. Again, the Sadducees supported Rome. The Pharisees did not. They felt they should be independent. They did not like the Romans. And I don't have time today, but man, I could get into all sorts of crazy stuff about the trials of Jesus before his crucifixion and why the Sadducees said the things they did, why the Pharisees were afraid of doing the things they did. Just crazy cool stuff that's based on understanding what's going on there. So that's what happened during these 400 silent years. The Greeks gave language. The Romans raised roads. The Jews just waited. So why don't we repeat that just because I want you to say something. So let's say the Greeks... Very good. The Romans and the Jews. Very good. So, you've got in this time, God is setting things up. He is not silent. He is still working because he has a message that he wants to spread to the entire world. And what better way to spread the message to the entire world? Into a world where everyone speaks the same language. Into a world where messages can be communicated quickly. There was no email. There was no internet. There was no cell signal except in parts of Jerusalem. No, just kidding. But they had roads that they could move quickly and pass this message along. See, God was not silent. He is working, and the Jews are saying, where is this one coming? Where is he? Where is he? And God's like, y'all hold on a second, because I'm about to do something. And that's what he did. So let's move on here. That's your 400 silent years. Let's talk about perspective for a second. I want to pause and back up. Let's look at perspective. I want you to, on your paper, you have 5, 1 through 5, you have blanks there, right? So, what I want you to do is right now, I want you, with a pen, and if you have younger kids that can't write, moms, dads, aunts, uncles, whatever, please help them, because I want them to participate in this. But I want you to write down 5 different, I think it's on the screen here, describe this room in 5 statements. So, what do you see in this room? Don't talk to anybody else unless it's a kid that can't write or, you know, whatever. But write down on that piece of paper, numbers 1 through 5, write 5 different statements that describe this room. Go. I hope you did it because I'm going to call on some people to share their work. If you didn't, I'm going to give you a minus on your report card for today. No, here's what I need. Jeremy, I'm actually going to skip that. Don't move it, but the next part we're not going to do because we're running out of time. But what I need to do is, I need someone in this room. Actually, I already know because I learned this a couple weeks ago and I knew this, but I just remembered it, that the word Matthew was also the word Levi. The name Matthew and Levi are the same name. And so I'd like Levi, if you could come up here with your paper right now. All right. And is there anyone in the room named Mark? Anybody? Anyone close to Mark? Anyone in the room that has word name that begins with M? Come on, there's no M's in here? Martin. All right, Martin and Mark. We'll pretend that Martin is Mark. Okay, so Matthew, Levi. Levi, Martin. Levi, Martin. And Ungst. Lukey, can you please come up here with your paper? And Shali. All right, you got it in your head. Okay, he's got it in his head. He's going to have to show his work. He's one of those guys. Where's Luke? I need Luke Ungst on his paper. Okay. Oh, no. No. Okay. Are there any other Lukes in the room? Lukes. All right. All right. Anyone else begin with Logan. Luther. Not any Luthers. Logan. Okay. So you stand right here. No, wait. Switch. Switch. So let's just pretend that we've got Levi, Martin, Logan, and John, or Levi's other name would be Matthew and Mark and Luke, kind of, Logan, and John. So Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Now, what I'd like you to do is can you just tell me the five things that you saw? Actually, you know what? Yours is written down. I'm going to go with him first so he's not stealing your answer because I think he might do that. All right, five things.
Black.
Dark.
Music.
Preaching, and I can't remember the last one. He's getting old. Sorry. All right.
Space.
All right, spaces. Okay, what do you have, Logan?
Big.
Bright.
Cold.
Cold. How about that, if you were here a few years ago? Anyway, cold, dark,
black.
So you said big, or you said bright, and you said dark. Okay, now what did you say?
Lights.
People.
Chairs.
Okay, so you guys didn't talk about people or chairs. Go ahead.
Instruments.
And
air conditioning.
Okay. All right. And what do you have?
Lights.
People. Oh, people. Okay.
Walls.
Nobody said anything about walls.
It's big.
Okay.
Microphones.
Nobody said anything about microphones. So, of these four answers with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which ones were right? But they were different answers, right? Okay. The Gospels are four different views of the story of Jesus told by four different people. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John told the story of the told their stories, their version, their perspective on what happened in the Gospels. So it's important to understand that this is history. This is what happened during that time. But you can't read Matthew to the end and feel like you're going to pick up at the end of Matthew. Because if you try to, all of a sudden Jesus is born all over again and he just died and rose again. And then if you read the end of Mark and then the same thing would happen, he'd be born and raised again and then die. You know, you can't do it that way because there are four different perspectives of the same story written at the same time or about the same events. So you guys can have a seat. Thank you very much. So the idea being that when you look at the Gospels, they are four different views. You have Matthew's view, Mark's view, John's view, and I missed Luke. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John's view of the story of Jesus. So let's quickly review, kind of overview. And you've got this on your page there. You should have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I believe. And I want to look at what was going on. So Matthew, he wrote, click next. I don't know what's next. Okay, so Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So you've got these four different Gospels, these four different stories of history, and we'll talk about what gospel means in a moment, but they're written by four different people. Matthew, he was a guy that wrote primarily to Jews. His gospel was written to Jews, so you can write that in there. That's important to know because he uses a lot of terms like Messiah, like coming, the coming one, the anointed one, Christ. He used a lot of Old Testament references because anyone that was Jewish, and he was, anyone that was Jewish in his culture would understand those right away. Oh, I get it. I understand those. I'm Jewish. I understand my Old Testament history because they learned that. That was part of their culture. And so that's who Matthew wrote to. He was the Jews. And I don't know if I'm going down or across again. Okay, Mark. Mark wrote to Romans. He was writing to the Roman people that were involved in their area, you know, that they were occupying them. And so he wrote his gospel, his story of Jesus, he wrote to the Romans. He wanted the Romans to understand certain things. And so as he wrote it, you see this, he wrote to Romans. We'll come back to that in a second. And then Luke was a doctor. Luke also wrote Acts, which is kind of interesting. But Luke wrote Luke to the Gentiles. The Gentiles is a fancy word, also sometimes known as Greeks, but the way they used it in the Bible in the New Testament was a Gentile was someone that wasn't Jewish. So basically, Matthew wrote to the Jews living in Israel, and Mark wrote to the Romans over in Rome and that were kind of ruling the whole area, and Luke wrote to the Gentiles. It was sort of a general thing. If you're not Jewish, this is for you. And then John, he wrote to everyone. His story, John's story, was written to all. It was written to, you know, it didn't really matter. It wasn't like specifically directed at a certain group of people. It was written to everyone. And again, this is important to understand because it affects why things are included, why things aren't included. So you've got Matthew going back. He talked about how Jesus is the king or the Messiah. Jesus is the king or the Messiah. You see that over and over because Jewish people understood what that meant. They got that. They were waiting. Jews just waited. Where's the Messiah? Where's the Messiah? Where's the Messiah? Where's the one that's coming to rescue us? Matthew said, this is the one we're talking about. Then you've got Mark. He wrote about Jesus as a servant because he wanted to tell the Romans and show them, which were oppressive, the idea of serving someone else was not in their vocabulary because they were in charge. If you were a Roman with a Jewish person, that Jewish person had to do anything you want. A Roman soldier could force any Jewish person to do, for the most part, do anything. They could tell them that here, I need you to carry my stuff for me, all my heavy armor. And the law required that a Jewish person could carry a Roman's armor for up to 1 mile. And Jesus said, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. Go to the second mile. Go that extra that mile. And that's where that comes from, because the Jewish people were forced to carry for at least 1 mile. So the idea of a servant to Romans was sort of a crazy concept. What do you mean this guy came and gave his life for everyone? What do you mean he came to serve? And then you've got Luke and his story talking about Jesus as a perfect human. Because if he's talking about Messiah to people that don't get the Messiah, like many of us don't in the way a Jewish person would, he talks about how he was human. He was fully man and fully God. He was perfect. We all get humanity. We're all human. And Jesus was perfect. Jesus was a perfect human. And then John, to everyone, talked about how Jesus is God. So you'll see this theme about how Jesus is God. He's not just a man. He's not just a perfect man, but he is God in the flesh. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. That's what John says at the beginning of his gospel. So you have these four different views. Interestingly enough, Matthew and Luke both have genealogies. And a couple years ago, we did a series in Christmas time called The Many Jacked Up Generations and Jesus Genealogy, a Christmas tale. And we looked at some of the different people in the genealogies of Jesus, which a genealogy is just a family history. And the interesting thing is that Matthew's genealogy, he was talking to Jews, his went all the way back to Abraham and talked about how Jesus was related to Abraham. Because Jewish people called Abraham their great father. He was the one that was sort of the father of their nation. And so going back to Abraham made a big deal for Jewish people. And then Luke's genealogy, he went all the way back to Adam, because Adam was the first human. And so he was talking about humanity. So just some interesting things there. And that is what was going on with these four different views. So you can't read them from beginning to end in order. You read them in what is called parallel, because they're all kind of things happening at the same time. And so there's different things that are highlighted. If there's differences in the story, it's not because the stories are wrong or because these guys aren't speaking on behalf of God. It's because it's their different perspective on the same situation. Make sense? So let me just summarize here a couple of verses. If you want to write these down, these are just interesting notes in the Gospels about what they're writing. The first one is in Luke chapter 1. And Luke writes this. He's writing it. It's his Gospel. He says, many people have set out to write accounts about the events that have been fulfilled among us. They used the eyewitness reports circulating among us from the early disciples. Having carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I have also decided to write a careful account for you, the most honorable Theophilus. He was writing to a guy named Theophilus because he wanted him to know the story of what was going on. So you can be certain of the truth of everything you were taught. So here you have Luke, basically like just a little parenthetical comment in the midst of his gospel saying, hey everybody, here's why I'm writing. I just wanted to put this account together. So it's just a little bit more of an explanation. John has a similar kind of statement in John chapter 20. He says, Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. So Jesus did more than John actually wrote down. He's just writing to everybody. But these are written down that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John said, I wrote what you needed to know because I want you to get that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. And you need to believe in him and have life in his name. So that's what John, that little comment he wrote in the middle of his gospel about what he was doing, why he was writing. All right. So, you got a map there. All right, let's do some quick word, and I'm not even going to talk about this much, I'm sorry, but at least I'll give you some geography ideas here. Let's talk about the cities in the gospel. So we're looking at this zoomed in area. We've got all these cities, and you just pop them up there real quick. Provinces. Galilee, Judea, Perea, Samaria. And then you got some cities in these areas. And I want to look at these cities real quick. So right up here, and should come up next. Yes. Four cities I want you to know. And you can mark them on your map there. You should have a little map. Right at the top, at the cap of the Sea of Galilee, you have a city called Capernaum. C-A-P-E-R-N-A-U-M. Capernaum. And this city is this town is in the land of Galilee, in the province of Galilee. And then, I think I'm going north to south. I think I am. Let's just go with it. Yes. Okay. Then, down here at the southern end of Galilee, we're still in Galilee here, is a city, you can't read that, sorry, a city called Nazareth. N-A-Z-A-R-E-T-H. Nazareth. So you have Capernaum in the north, and in Galilee, the southern part, you've got Nazareth. So, Capernaum, Nazareth, and then coming down, now we're down in the nation, in the province, the southern left, is or southern, I shouldn't say left, western. The southern western province is called Judea. This is Judea, so we're in Judea with these two. Those two are in Galilee, these two are in Judea. And the northern one is a very popular city, very important city throughout the Old and New Testament, and that is Jerusalem. Jerusalem, by the way, not only is it in the northern part of Judea, it's also physically higher. It is on at a peak of a mountain. And so when people talk about going up to Jerusalem, it's because they physically had to go up to Jerusalem. They had to go up, not just north, but up. And then below Jerusalem is another M. So you have two M's at the end, Jerusalem and Bethlehem. So Bethlehem is just south, also in the land, in the province of Judea. So Capernaum is at the cap, at the top. Nazareth is near that. Nazareth is near. And your two M's, Jerusalem, Bethlehem. Bethlehem. Those are four major cities that take place in the Gospels. And we're going to keep going. All right. The word gospel. We use that word a lot today. It actually came from two words. One was good, and the other one was spell. And good means good. And spell was an Old English word for news or story. And so gospel literally means good story or good news. And the interesting word is that the Greek spelling of that is evangelion. We also translate that as evangelical. So that word means good news, all the same word. So, good news. We're going to summarize 5 minutes, and I've got five words. We can do it. A minute, a word. Oh, then I've got verses. Okay. Five things here. They're all shuns, that describe what happens during these four Gospels. So I'm now going to summarize kind of just a quick outline of what each of the Gospels talk about in the good news. The first one we've got is the incarnation. Incarnation. And this is the fact that Jesus, God, became human. He was born. Carne, the Latin, but also the Spanish word, is meat. And so this is God in the meat, God in the flesh. He was incarnated. God came to earth and dwelt among us. And so that is what we call the birth of Jesus. Christmas time, we celebrate the incarnation of Jesus. That's what the whole Christmas story is. In the beginning of the Gospels, talk about this. So that's and a lot of descriptions about what happened. And let me get my story right here. So you've got Jesus. He was born down here in Bethlehem. And after Jesus was born in this important city, he was born in Bethlehem. And then if you remember the story, Herod was trying to kill the kids. And so they fled, and we don't have this on your map, but they fled over here to Egypt. And they were in Egypt for a while, so God said they could come back. And when Joseph and Mary came back with their young Jesus, they actually ended up settling in Nazareth. And so when you hear about Jesus of Nazareth, it's because Jesus grew up in Nazareth. So I am Sean of Newark. Many of you are whomever you are of Belleville or of Lewistown or of whatever. He was Jesus of Nazareth because that's where he grew up. Interestingly enough, I was born in Wilmington. But that's not what I am. I'm not Sean of Wilmington. I'm Sean of Newark because that's where I lived. And so Jesus is Jesus of Nazareth, even though he was born in Bethlehem. Get it? So that's where Jesus, his childhood was spent there. Then there's sort of a gap in terms of the story. They don't tell us much about Jesus' teenage years. They don't talk about how he went out with his buddies. You know, he stole pumpkins and smashed them, things like that. They don't tell any of those stories. It doesn't, and he didn't do that because he was sinless, fully man, fully God, so I don't want to say that. But then it kind of jumps to around 30. And the next section here is what we're calling the proclamation. And this is where Jesus begins his ministry. He begins telling people about who he is and who he says he is. And it starts with an event that takes place in the Jordan River where Jesus was baptized. Jesus was baptized in the Jordan River, and that was sort of the official beginning of his ministry because he was saying that he is a follower of the true and living God. We have a baptism coming up in a few weeks, and the baptism is a way of identifying as someone who follows Jesus, follows God. So he was baptized in the Jordan River, and then he was taken into the Judean desert. Actually, it was more down here, by the way. Baptized the lower part of the southern part of the Jordan River, taken in the Judean desert where he had, for 40 days, was tempted by Satan. And so that was the beginning of his ministry. That was the beginning of his proclamation. I'm going to skip the next, take me to the next part of the good news. Thank you. So, this proclamation, this is when he was telling people about who he says he was. This was his ministry years. It was about 3 years of Jesus' life before he was crucified were his ministry years. So, from about 30 to 33, Jesus did what we're calling the proclamation. This is where he's telling people, he is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He is here to take away the sins of the world. He is here to be the example, to be the servant, to be the one to make a difference. And there were two parts to his ministry, and there's a pretty clear line in there. But the first part of his ministry, he was accepted. And during this time, he was doing miracles because he was showing people, I am the Son of God. I am truly God. And people were amazed. They accepted him and were like, wow, I want to be around this Jesus. And people were following him. There were lots of people that were following him as he was telling this story. But as his ministry went along, the Pharisees and Sadducees, two groups of people that did not like each other in any way, were not happy about Jesus because he was messing up both of their worlds. Both of their ways of life. So the Pharisees and the Sadducees got together and were looking for a way to kill Jesus. And so halfway through his ministry, give or take, people started rejecting him. The crowds weren't as big. The Pharisees were getting mad. The Sadducees were getting mad. They were raising up people against Jesus. And so during this time, Jesus started speaking. That's when you see primarily Jesus speaking in parables. Because he said the parables were set up as a way that he could talk to the people that got it, sort of like code, and the people that didn't get it wouldn't get it. And he even says that. That's the point of the parables. And so during his early part of his ministry, he was doing miracles. Not that he stopped doing miracles later, but when he was rejected, he started speaking in parables. And not that he didn't tell parables earlier, but for the most part, those are the kind of the main ways of his ministry life. So he was accepted at first and then rejected, and things were starting to get pretty bad. During his acceptance, when he was being accepted, most of his ministry took place in Jerusalem. Things were going well. He was in Jerusalem teaching people, miracling them, and doing all sorts of great things, raising the dead, healing the sick, all that good stuff. But then people rejected him, and so he kind of fled. and left Jerusalem and ended up making Capernaum sort of home base. Now, he didn't do his ministry only in Capernaum. He spent a lot of time out traveling, but Capernaum became home for him for the second half of his ministry during his time of rejection, because Jerusalem is where the seat of authority, the center of power was, and they were the ones that did not want him, so he was rejected. So those are the things that happened during his ministry years. And then, going on next here. Then he, the next word here we've got is crucifixion. So things were getting worse. Things were getting worse. They finally rose up against him. Jesus, a lot of the Gospels is actually the last week of Jesus' life. So if you think about a guy 33 years old, a big portion of it is the last 3 years of his life. And a big portion of that is the last week of his life. And so he goes back to Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, and there's so much built into that about why he went there on that day, because that Palm Sunday was the day when they typically announced, like, well, they didn't call it back then, but there was the announcing of the king, the new king that was coming. And Jesus went in Jerusalem on the day of announcing the king was coming. And so it was that's why the Pharisees really got ticked off at that point. And so he went back to Jerusalem, and there, over the course of a week, the people crucified him. He was killed on a cross, and then came back to life. And so then you've got his resurrection. And so after being in the grave for 3 days, and we're not talking about this too much because this is stuff we talk about all the time, but in terms of overview, this is how the story fits. He rose again. He came back to life after 3 days and proved that he was who he said he was. That to the Jewish people, Matthew said, yup, he's the Messiah. To the Romans, look at him. He served enough. Luke says, Mark says, he served to give his own life. Luke says, this guy here, man, he is the perfect human. And so the stories tell the same thing over and over. And then after his resurrection was his commission. And here's the thing, and I really didn't have time to talk about this, and it's time. We're going to get into this next week. But the commission was Jesus saying, look, I have lived and served among you for 3 years. His disciples followed him everywhere he went. He called these disciples, and they were nobodies. They weren't good enough. And he said, look, you guys, and we're going to talk about this during the IMMC3 series, but he said, you guys can do this. You guys can follow me. And so he gets to the end of his life. He dies on the cross, raises again by the power of God. He is God. And then he says to his disciples, look, guys, now this is your thing. This is your deal. He hands them the keys and says, you're in charge. Go. And that's where we get the book of Acts, which is the church, and how the church spread. And I want you to understand something. Sitting in this room about 2,000 years after that moment, you are a part of that commission. Jesus has given you the keys and said, you can do this. He says, it's not an issue of how good you think you are or how much you know or anything. He's like, this is your thing now. We need to carry on the message of being the servant leaders to people, of sharing with people about how Jesus matters. I mean, this is the thing. Like, we are part of that today. And again, we'll get into that more next week as we look at the spread of the church and what happens. But I want you to get that because, and here's, like, let me just be totally real, right? We're getting ready to gear up for the fall. And we've talked about Brian the Clipboard. I had an amazing meeting. It was that Tuesday as we began planning MC3 Student, which is going to launch in October of this year for students in 6th through 12th grade. We've been talking about the new plan for Ignition. Just a lot of cool things that are happening. And that's going to take a lot of people serving. And so I'm just being real. Yeah, am I using this? I guess you could say I am. But I want you to understand that I think the issue here, too, is that there are a lot of you sitting there saying, I could never do anything. I couldn't do that. But I want you to know that God believes in you. That Jesus says to his disciples, he says, you go make more disciples. We call it the Great Commission in church. You make disciples who are going to make disciples who are going to make disciples. And if you are a Christ follower here today, you are a disciple of Christ because somebody was a disciple of Christ because somebody was a disciple of Christ because it goes all the way back to that moment when Jesus handed it off to his followers. And so I just want to encourage you with that. You know, if your schedules are weird and you can't help and can't serve, you got to find a way, honestly, because that's what being a follower of Jesus is all about. But if you're in here thinking, I can't do that, I want to tell you, you can. I truly believe that. God can work through any of us. So don't just sit back and say, well, I'm not a teacher, so I can't be up front, or I don't know how to play the bass, so I can't. Like, There are tons of areas where you can serve at MC3, where you can serve Jesus. And I want you to get that. So that is a 5-minute late overview of the Gospels, overview of that part of the New Testament. But that's kind of what's going on, and we're going to pick up more next week as this message that Jesus hands off to his disciples right here. We're talking 12 guys, and one of them was bad. His name was Judas, and so he killed himself, and they replaced him with another guy. So we're talking 12 human beings are going to start here in Jerusalem, and this entire map is going to be flooded with followers of Jesus. And this map is going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger until it includes Mifflin County. We're part of that story. Thank you, guys. Have a great afternoon.